You know, we've been going through 1 Peter, and Peter has challenged us so far to live lives that would bring people to Christ. He says you need to be submissive to government authorities and to each other, and he's encouraged us the same happens last week with our spouses and how we're supposed to be supportive and loving in there. He's encouraged us and he's reminded us that we're going to suffer. You're going to be falsely accused things. But when you are, you should live such good lives that when people say those things about you, they look foolish. They look like idiots. And because they're falsely accusing you, and people go, there's no way. I've seen their life. It's not that way. So today we're going to be reminded that, just a little bit, that we're going to receive a blessing. We were created for a blessing. We're supposed to have a blessing. And so, again, Peter, remember, he's talking to these churches that Paul has been going to, and he's been talking to them and encouraging them because they have been falsely accused. They have been suffering. And so he's going to encourage them and tell them, folks, that's the way. He's just encouraging them again. You need to live a certain way. There's the right way to live and the wrong way to live. And so we're going to look at these two examples, and we're going to start off with how not to live. Okay, how we should not live. Okay, because, I mean, it's easier to start with a negative and with a positive. It just seems to be more, you know, producing better things in our minds to think that way. So he says this. He says, do not repay evil for evil or insult for insult. Why? Well, because that's the world's way of doing it. You guys know that, right? That's the way it is. Everybody's out for revenge. It's the world's way of doing it. Trading an insult for an insult is common. Evil for evil is common. And so it's everywhere. You're going to come across it. I was going to try to show a clip, and I was going to show a clip from this good old movie called Sandlot. Because if you want to know about trading insult for insult, there's a scene when these guys are playing baseball, and the guys that are a little better off, they have their own bikes, and they have their own uniforms, and all that stuff. They have their own ball diamond, and they come riding in, and there's some good, you know, music coming in, and they pull up, and these guys, this is the picture after that, but they all throw their gloves down, and as they're walking, like, yeah, we're ready to rumble, have a good time, and fight with this, The guy from the other team starts to insult everybody there except for one guy. Well, the guy in the middle, the big guy, he takes him on. He says, no problem. And there's an exchange of insults. And I was going to show the video, but there's some of the, I don't know, the boyish potty humor in there that's probably not appropriate for us to be showing in church kind of thing. But, you know, they call each other morons and stupid and insult each other back and forth until the ultimate insult comes. And it comes from this man. He tells the other guys who are all on the ball team, they got their jerseys, all look nice, clean and white. And he says, you play ball like a girl. Now, in today's society, that's not the case. Girls can play ball pretty well. But back in those days, girls didn't play ball. In fact, it was just kind of the ultimate insult. Because at that time, nobody continues with another insult. It's like, ooh, did he just say that? He went there? But it's common in our society for insult versus insult. Just go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. You see it all the time. It's in the movie Hook. I come across it all the time. I have 4 boys. You don't think it doesn't happen? I mean, it's like, guys, be quiet. You don't need to do that. You're brothers. You love each other. But, you know, it happens all the time. The thing is why do they do that? Think about it. Why do you insult somebody when someone insults you? Because you want to get it back, right? It's kind of a revenge thing. It's just kind of there. You know, you did what? You called me what? You know, and so you just kind of want to kind of push back some way. And you always want to try to be the smarter one and end up with something positive. You can always tell the people who are not very bright because they start inserting 4-letter words. Because that's all they can come up with. You know what I'm saying? They got to be smarter than that. And so insult to insult is common. Evil for evil is common. Why? Because revenge is desired. People like to get even. And what's interesting is, believe it or not, this was actually encouraged by God back in the Levitical days, back a long, long time ago. But it wasn't an insult for an insult or an evil for evil. It was called an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And in fact, in Leviticus 24, verses 19 through 20, it says, anyone who injures their neighbor is to be injured in the same manner. Through a fracture for a fracture, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. The one who has inflicted the injury must suffer the same injury. That's the way it was when they were wandering through the desert. That was what it was. So basically, you're not supposed to injure each other. You're not, and it goes on about all kinds of things. If you injure someone's animal, and they even had on there, like if, in the laws, if you injured a pregnant woman and the woman lost the child, that, that you had not only compensation for how much that child would, I mean, it was huge what they would do. But it was, but God at that time was saying, that's the way it's going to be. But then Jesus comes along in Matthew 5, in the Sermon on the Mount, and he changes things up a little bit. In verse 38, he says, "You have heard that it was said," and actually they've heard it, it was said, it was in the law, "an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you, do not resist an evil person. If anyone slaps you on the cheek, turn to them the other cheek also. If anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, hand over your coat as well. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them too. Give anyone who asks, and do not turn away from anyone who wants to borrow from you." Completely different than the law that they were used to. Completely different. Jesus' teachings are completely opposite. Because I think what was happening, there was a whole lot of blind, toothless people running around. You know what I mean? There was just, they were eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. It was leaving. They were gone. It was happening. And Israel needed to be a little better than that. And so Jesus comes along and tells them that, hey, it's going to change. Life is different. So you know, and you would expect that. It comes across this way. But Peter is suggesting the same thing as Jesus, that we should be living a way that people take notice. Paul suggests something similar. In fact, in Romans 12, he says, do not repay evil for evil. See, they're having to contradict something that people have been living with and living with and living with and living with. He says, don't repay anyone evil for evil, but be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everyone. And if it's possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Do not take revenge, my dear friends, but leave room for God's wrath, for it's written, it's mine to revenge, and I will repay, says the Lord. On the contrary, and then he quotes a proverb, 25, he says, if your enemy's hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing this, you'll heap burning coals upon his head. It says, do not be overcome with evil, but overcome evil with good. I found that interesting. Paul is saying, as far, if it's possible, he realizes it's a difficult thing, even for Christians in those days, it's difficult for Christians today. But he says, if it's possible, as long as it depends upon you. So where does the monkey fall? You know, the monkey that gets on people's back? And yeah, people come, I remember when I had multiple staff, people would come in and put the monkey on my desk. And they would tell me a problem, and they would try to leave it there as if I was the one who was supposed to take care of it. Like, whoa, this is still your monkey. You take it with you. And they're like, no, I don't want the problem. It's like, it ain't my problem, it's your problem, and you're not going to give it to me. So when he says, as far as it depends on you, he's putting the monkey on your back. As far as it depends on you, it's your responsibility to try to live at peace with everyone. See, that can be hard sometimes, isn't it? Especially in a society where violence is common and things like that are common. How do we live at peace with everybody? We do our best. If it's possible, as far as it depends on us. Does it mean it's always going to happen? No. But remember, you're representing Christ. You got to do your best to live at peace with everybody. And then it goes on to say about, not taking revenge. And again, this has been a common thing. And this is tough. Because we like to take revenge. I've seen people get cut off, and then they pass the person and cut them off. Because it helped in some way, shape, or form. It just caused more problems on the interstate. You know, people just get that, I want to get them back. Are you serious? You know, and people want to always get revenge for some wrong that's been done to them. And the thing is that we don't have to. It's a lot of the stuff that we want to get revenge for doesn't really even matter. It's not even an issue. We tend to make it an issue. We get more offended and bent out of shape than anybody I've ever met. Our society is the most offended people there are in the world. And I'm like, really? Get over it. It's not like something's going to change because you got offended. Oh, well, get over it. Christian, I mean, think about it. People get offended for everything. If we say in the name of Jesus Christ, or even say the name Jesus, people get offended. I'm like, so the name Jesus offends you. And so, what, you have like got some disease now because I said the word Jesus? Or you've come down with some kind of sickness? You've lost money because I said Jesus? No, I said the word Jesus. It's a belief that I have. But yet people get offended by it all the time. And they don't need to be. And he says, you know, don't worry about revenge. Don't worry about it. It's God will take care of it down the road. In fact, he says, and it's interesting that most people think, oh, well, That whole thing about being nice to your enemies, that's just Jesus. That's just in the New Testament. But actually, they're quoting a proverb in the Old Testament. If your enemy's hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him something to drink. And it says it heaps burning coals upon their head. Now, I used to always think that that was like, I'm getting them to, they're feeling the pain of how nice I'm being to them. But actually, that means that there is a blessing. The coals upon your head is actually a blessing from God. That means God's blessing is upon you. And so basically, when you're helping these people and you're doing things, when they're mean to you normally, but you're back nice to them, you're giving them a blessing. Now, they're not going to try to give you a blessing, but that's what you're doing. And that's what we're called to do. Don't be overcome by evil, but we're supposed to overcome evil with good. We're supposed to do what's right. It's funny because then it says on the toward the bottom of the verses that we went through, it says, on the contrary, repay evil with blessing, because this is what you were called, so that you may inherit a blessing. See, this so that is that you can inherit a blessing. See, the thing is the title of this sermon is Be Prepared to Be Blessed, or The Good is Coming kind of thing. God has called us to inherit a blessing. We're going to inherit a blessing. Think about that. That's pretty cool thing. What kind of blessing are we going to receive from God? We're not supposed to play evil with evil, but evil with blessing. We're supposed to give them a blessing. Why? Because we're going to receive a blessing. It's eternal life. But God takes care of us. Have you noticed that? He blesses you. He'll take care of you when you least expect it, and He will bless you. And a lot of times, we're so busy, we don't even see the blessing that God's giving us. We just get so caught up in the things that we're doing that we don't see the blessing that God gives us. Powerful. So there's that on that side, but the other side would be, so how we're supposed to live. So he says, right, we're not supposed to do insult for insult. We're not supposed to repay evil for evil. We're not supposed to get revenge, but we're supposed to live a certain way. And he says this, finally, all of you, and we're going to go through these because there's quite a bit of them here. It says, be like-minded, be sympathetic, love one another, be compassionate, and be humble. We're just going to go through those real quick. Think about it for a second. Be like-minded. Think alike. Now, how does this happen? How does it happen that you think alike? The guy that's coming next week that will be helping us lead worship and stuff like that, he was my associate minister. I discipled him through. He went in to be a senior minister, and so he was my intern, and then I hired him that way, and he's like that. And so it was funny because there would be a problem in the church. Something would come up, and we had to deal with some logistics or something like this, and we knew about it. We both knew about it, and we'd be in our offices, and I'd get up, and I come to his office, and I'd say, hey, I've been thinking about this. And I think this is what we should do. And I lined out this thing. And he'd go, oh, really? You mean like this? And he'd reach back to his printer and he just printed off the exact same thing. And we hadn't even talked about it. And he laid it down. I'm like, man, that's scary. He's like, it really is. That God would use both of us in the exact same, have the exact same plan and work it out in the same way. We were thinking like-minded. Why? Well, here's the reason why. Because we had the same beliefs. See, we had the same beliefs, not about Jesus Christ and that, but we had the same beliefs about the church and about where it should go. And we had the same mission and the same purpose, and we both could quote it. And it was all there so that we knew exactly where we needed to go. And when it came to solving problems, a lot of times it just worked out. God knew exactly what we needed to do, and we knew what God wanted us to do. And we both were on board with it, and it went. See, the thing is our beliefs make a difference. Since we believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God and that He bore our sins on the cross, was killed and buried on the third day, and He rose on the third day, and that's a similar thought pattern. We have that same belief in Jesus Christ. But the thing is there's some people that don't have that same belief. They have a problem with the resurrection. They have a problem with other things. And they might be in our church. So the thing is we need to be like-minded. And we have one area that starts us getting like-minded, and that is our belief in Jesus Christ. I mean, He saved us from our sins. That's a powerful belief. And we believe it together. And I realize there can be some differences once in a while with that. But basically, and I've told you this before, that's it. The death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. That's the important part. After that, we can have differing opinions. But that part, you got to get right. Why? Because it's our salvation. Comes from Him. But I'm going to give you a quiz. I'm going to ask you a question. And for new people that are along here, you just listen because you're not going to know. But the people who have been in church for a while and been here, you should know the answer to this. Okay? And I believe that all of us should know this, and here's the reason why. This is how we should be like-minded, because if anybody asks you about our church, you should be able to tell them. And if you can't tell them yet, then you got some work to do, and you got some homework to do, and you need to get busy, because you're part of our church. So what is our mission and the purpose of our church? Anybody know? Without looking at the wall? Everybody went. Okay, right there. If you're having to look at the wall to tell what it is, I know people are like, oh no, he went over that in belong class. What was that? The thing is we believe that every member should be a disciple. That's the key. Every member should be a disciple. And so with that, our mission is that Grandview, we believe that we are following Jesus, being changed by Christ, and joining him on his mission. There it is. So we want to be disciples who are making disciples. We believe everybody should be a disciple. Now, the question then comes, well, how do you do that? People are like, well, that's nice. How do you do that? And that's on this wall, right? In case you didn't look over there. We do what? We share. Well, what do we share? I don't have it up there. We share the gospel. We share our lives. We share truth. We share new habits, new ways of living, because Christ has made a difference, because we're disciples. Connect. Well, how do we connect? Well, we connect with God in worship service and other things, but we connect with others. And how do we do connect with others? Thank you. All my life group people better have said that. If you're not involved in life group, you're having a hard time connecting with others. Why? Because that's how we do it. We do life together. You know what was great about this? This is our plan. This is our purpose. When Justin and Ginger left to go to Florida, it was a sad day for me. It was my best friend leaving. But when Justin and Ginger left to Florida, I started looking for churches for them to get involved in. You know what was great? I found a church. It was all about discipleship. They had life groups, and their life groups do what? Life together. And I'm like, guys, man, it's a bigger church, but they're doing the exact same things that we're doing, being like-minded. Okay, and we do that with God's purpose. And then the last one is train. Well, how do we train people? Well, we equip them for ministry. We provide them ministry opportunities. We want to provide areas, places for you to serve. We want to release you to do ministry. In this discipling process, we believe that either you should be being discipled or you are discipling someone, or maybe you're doing both. And I know it's a hard concept to grasp. I know it's changing what has been here for years, and I'm trying to work with that and trying to get that there. But I've been here 3 years, and it should have been stuck in your head yet. I mean, you should have it. It should be there. And if not, then maybe you need to have a little study on that. I mean, I'm going through it here on a sermon, but we should remind us, where do we get this idea from? Do you guys remember? Matthew 4:19, Jesus called us first disciples, and since that's what we're supposed to be, what does he say? Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. Follow, we are following Jesus. I will make is change. If you're making something, you're changing something. We're being changed by Christ and fishers of men, joining him on his mission to bring other people to follow Christ. You see it? We're supposed to be like-minded. The reason why I'm pushing this right now is because we should be like-minded. If somebody asks you, oh, you go to church somewhere, where do you go? Grandview Christian Church. Well, what's that church about? I don't know, whatever. You're not representing the church very well. Okay, what are we about? We're about making disciples. Well, how does that work in your life? Are you discipling somebody? Are you working on this process? Are you being discipled by somebody else? How is that working? See, you got to have this in your mind. You got to be able to know it. I've been in a church. I went there for my training for my church planting. And when I went there, it was this huge church in a very, very small town. It has 8,000 some people there. And they have, I don't know, 800 to 1,000 life groups. You want to talk about, whoa, okay? That many life groups, because they do life together. But it was interesting, and I did a quiz. I just thought I'd ask somebody, because I was attending church on a Friday night. Yes, they have Friday night church service. And I just walked up to somebody and said, hey, what's this church about? Bum, 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 bum. They had it perfectly. I said, can you explain that a little bit for me? Oh, no problem. And then they started explaining it to me like this. They passed the test perfectly. I was like, oh, I'm impressed. Maybe that person just knew what was going on. So I went and asked somebody else. And same thing. They knew exactly who their what their church was about, what they believed about Jesus Christ, and how they were a part of the process of what was going on. That's the reason why that church went from 80 people in a basement to 8,000 in their town, and they have planted countless churches throughout the northern Idaho, Washington. I mean, they're now in all over the United States, this process of what we're doing, disciple-making. And that's why it's important for us to know, are we like-minded? We're supposed to be. What do you believe about Jesus Christ? If you don't know, man, in a couple weeks there's the Belong class. Show up. We'll go through it again. And I encourage you, learn, memorize this stuff, where it's at. If you haven't been, come. Even if you've been a member for a long time, I encourage you to come and find out what it means to be a part of this church and to grow. Yes, I know you've been a part of it, and I get that for a long time. I know. And we're just trying to focus ourselves so that we are like-minded, because we're called to be that way. See, the thing is the one after that, he goes this, you're supposed to be sympathetic. Well, what is sympathetic? That's caring about someone's needs. Well, if we're all like-minded and we're thinking the same way, it's very easy for us to care about someone's need. Be sympathetic. If something is going on with people, when people are hurting, we hurt with them. When they're rejoicing, we rejoice with them. It means to have the same feeling. And that's part of what our life groups are supposed to do. If one of our life groups, if someone in your life group has a problem and you know, they broke a leg or something, then the guys in that group should step up and mow the lawn for them and make sure they do it in a time when the neighbors see. When the neighbors go, hey, man, what's going on? Who are these people coming over and helping? Oh, that's my life group. You got a perfect opportunity to invite your neighbors to come to your life group and be a part of it. We're supposed to be sympathetic, caring not only for the people that we have, but also people in the world. Be sympathetic. And I realize it's tough because they're not like-minded like us. And sometimes they just take advantage of Christians and what we do and our generosity and kind. But that's okay. Jesus said, that's okay. There's going to be this kind of people. He goes on to say, love one another. And this is a command we come across all the time. Jesus encouraged us to do this. John wrote about it. And a whole letter, the whole subject, the first John, is all about loving one another. We're supposed to love God and love others. It's part of being a disciple. We love God and we love others. The second's always harder. We have to try to love others. Why? Well, because loving God's pretty easy. Because loving God, who he is and what he did, that's pretty easy. But we have to love each other. We are flawed. We are broken. We're messed up. We still need God's love, and we still need each other's love, but we're not perfect. Loving Jesus, he was perfect. Loving God, he's perfect. That's easy. Loving each other, that's tougher. That's why God shows us grace, you know that? So that we learn how to practice it with each other, with forgiveness and showing love to one another when it's really hard to love others, to love those people that annoy you or cause you problems or cost you money or those different things. But we're supposed to love each other as well, especially in the brotherhood of believers. But we're also supposed to love them. How do people know we're Christians? I know. It's the ichthus on your truck. That's what it is, right? That's how people know you're a Christian, when you cut them off. It was in Jesus' name you cut them off, right? That was what it was. No, maybe it's the cross necklace around your neck. Or a catchy t-shirt about your faith. That's how people know you're a Christian. You guys know the answer. By your love. Right, Jesus said a new command. See, here's the thing. The old command said an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. This is the way you're supposed to live. Jesus come along and says, I'm giving you a new command. It's more important. Here it is. Love one another as I have loved you. See, Jesus loved those guys, those disciples. He says, you must love one another. It's interesting because Jesus loved them. You do know that they weren't perfect. They were having a competition to see who got to sit on the right and the left of Jesus. And it was all started by one of their mothers. God bless her. She loves her. She's taking care of her kids. Well, what do you think? Why are you asking for that? I'm better than you are. And there's a whole problem. Jesus is like, guys, whatever. I mean, they're fishermen. You guys know about sailors? They like to do what? They like to fight. Have no problem with it. Now they like each other and it's supposed to like this, but there was also a tax collector in there. And then there was these guys called zealots whose sole purpose in their mind was to beat the snot out of the tax collectors. They hated them. They wouldn't even care if they killed them. And you're going to put two of these guys together in the same boat? A small boat. Think about it. Jesus says, guys, here's your new command. Love one another. He says, love one another. He says this, by this, everyone will know that you are my disciples. Why? Because you love one another. People noticed that they loved one another. They took care of each other. They loved one another. It's amazing. The sad thing is I can say this about some other faiths that, well, they're really not faith. They do have faith, but they're not Christ-based things. They're cults, other things. And I can look at some of them, and you can just tell because they take care of each other. They may not have the right understanding of who Jesus is and that he died on the cross. They have their own blown out things. But when I lived among them and they were up there in Idaho and Oregon and I came across them a lot, I could tell. Why? Because they took care of each other. That's what we're supposed to be doing. We're supposed to love one another. See, it's by our love. But then he goes on and says, oh, and when you're loving one another, do this, be compassionate. And I'll be honest with you, this is my hardest one. I am not a compassionate person. It causes me problems because I'm a believer, I'm a realist that you made your choice. If you make your choice to live that way or you make your choice to do that, you got to deal with the consequences. My kids love me. Hey, you made it. That's what you're going to have to do. Deal with it. It's hard for me, it always has been hard for me, to be compassionate. Because on the same side, I get at the church and a lot of things, I get the side of people using us all the time, or using people and the niceness and generosity of people. And so sometimes this one, I'm being honest with you guys, this one's the tough one for me. So I married a very, very compassionate woman. My wife is very compassionate. She has pushed me out of my comfort zone with compassion. Because she said, oh, no, we should do that. I'm like, I don't want to do that. No, I'm volunteering you. You need to do that. Thank you very much, dear. She's very good at that. Why? Because she knows I need to be growing in this compassion area. And so it's tough for me. I get it. We're all learning in Christ. Peter's just telling us, here's some things how you need to live. You may not be perfect in them. Just work on them. See, the thing is we need to show compassion. Matthew 9:36, Jesus was one who showed compassion all the time. It says he saw the crowds. He just saw people. And he had compassion on them. Because they were helpless and harassed like sheep without a shepherd. There was a whole group of people and they were being harassed by the religious leaders and all the people that were going on. And it was just making it harder for them to even come to know who Jesus was, to believe in the Messiah. And he just saw them and he had compassion for them. And I want to see like Jesus see. I want to learn how to have compassion when I look at people that way. Because right now, I'm still working on it. But God's grace is working with me. It's a journey. We know that. The last one he says is a fun one we enjoy as well. Be humble. And, you know, be humble. James says it a lot. James says, humble yourselves before the Lord and he will lift you up. So if you're willing to be humble before God, he says God will lift you up. Matthew 23 says, for those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. In other words, and there's a proverb that says, pride comes before a fall. When you're proud, when you're that and a bucket of bolts and everything else, humility is going to come your way. Humility is going to come. It'll be provided for you by God. It will come. And he's saying, we just need to live humble lives anyways. Be humble. You don't always have to be first. Tell that to a bunch of junior hires at camp when they're hungry. The smart ones learned, if I pray, I get to go first. Now I have a bunch of whole kids asking to pray because they want to go first. But it's a hard one for us to grasp, to be humble. It's hard for us to get through our thick skulls and that Christianity is not about us. See, we come to church and we like to have it a certain way. We come to church, we come to Christ, and we believe it's about us. But if we've given our life to Jesus Christ and we've grown and matured through the discipleship process, we come to a point where we realize this church thing, this whole believing in Jesus, is not about us. I believe in Jesus. That's good. But it's not about me. It's about people who don't know Jesus. And what can we do to show them Christ's love? And I know there's a balance there between pointing out sin and helping them get a grasp of understanding of sin and changing their lives and giving their life to Christ. When you give your life to Christ, there should be a change. You should stop sinning. Now, I realize it's a process and you're going to be working through those things. You'll be working on them until the day you die. But we have to realize and get in our minds, it's not about us. It's about bringing people to Christ. And what can we do? We're going to be compassionate. We're going to love one another. We're going to show people humility and consider others better than ourselves. See, there's families in our world that need to be shown humility. It's about other people's needs, and there's people that need help. And then he goes on, and Peter's going on, and he says this. He quotes a psalm, Psalm 34. And so, again, he's tying it back to the Old Testament. Hey, it's in both places. In Psalm 34, he says, whoever would love life and see good days must keep their tongue from evil and their lips from deceitful speech. And they must turn from evil and do good, and they must seek peace and pursue it. Oh, there it showed up again. For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are attentive to their prayers, but the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. He goes back and says, even in the Old Testament, if you want to have life and have good days, which I do, maybe you guys do, I want to have life and have good days, that I should keep my tongue from evil and my lips from deceitful speech. I need to turn from evil, I need to do good. I need to seek peace and pursue it. It showed up earlier. Why? Because the eyes of God are on the righteous, and he listens to their prayers. It's interesting because the last phrase of last week's sermon, when he was talking to husbands and how they're supposed to treat their wives and be respectful of the wives and all those things, the last line said, so nothing will hinder your prayers. And now he's saying, the Lord's ear is attentive to their prayers. The people who try to live a good life, who are righteous. But then he says that his face is against those who do evil. And that's an interesting thing, that God's face is against those who do evil. Now think about it. Where do you want to be? Think about that. Do you want to be on the side where God is looking at you with a face and intent that he's against you? Do you want God against you? I don't. Or would you rather have him... You know how you have to listen to sometimes to the little kids to try to understand them? You know what I'm talking about? When you have to listen to the kid, they're doing their best to explain this incredible thing that happened in their lives. And you've got to try to sit, you got to kind of listen to them, and you kind of got to get close, you got to get your ear down there and understand their own little kind of language of repeating the same thing over and over again. And what? You know, what? You're attentive to them. You're listening, you're trying to figure out what they're saying, because obviously it's important to them. Would you rather have God being attentive to you and listening to even the messed up utterances that we have in our prayers, or do you want him against you? I know where I want to be. I want God's ear to listen to me, pay attention to me. See, the thing is I want the life of God and good days, then I need to control my tongue. I need to control the speech that I say. I need to do my best to turn from evil. I need to do good. I want the Lord to hear my prayers. I want him to be attentive to that. See, the thing is we have this ability to hear something and it doesn't register in our minds. You guys know what I'm talking about? Guys, we all know. We'll be doing something and our wife will tell us to do something and you heard it. It rang around in your head a couple times and shot out the other side and then you did not do it, right? I have a perfect example. We went up to camp Saturday. Melissa got baptized. We were in the store. My wife says, would you give me some peanut M&Ms? Heard it? Yep, no problem, huh? Then my three boys, whatever, were getting all this stuff. I got back in the car. Guess what I forgot? Peanut M&Ms. That one blew up. Whoops. Yeah. You didn't listen to me. No, I did. I got distracted. God never gets distracted. See, we have a hard time grasping that God's not like us. I mean, we're built in his image, but that we have sin in our life, and we mess things up, and we get distracted very easily. But God, he can be attentive to our prayers, and he can be attentive to your prayers, and to your prayers, and your prayers, all of us at the same time. Because God is God. See, I want to live a righteous life so that God's attentive to my prayers. Not just hearing them, as he does, but he's attentive. He's paying attention a little more. Think about this. He closes up with this. Who's going to harm you for doing good? Now, in those days, that probably wouldn't have been a problem. Who's going to harm you for doing good? But even if you suffer for what is right, you are blessed. Do not fear their threats. Do not be frightened. See, there was apparently some threats going on toward the Christians. There were people threatening Christians. Now, we don't have that yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's far off. People threatening Christians. Now, we have a whole religious group that threatens us Christians. that we're supposedly infidels and everything like that, but we got to show them God's grace and love too. And that's tough. But they would harm us even if we were doing good, because they don't care. They don't have the same belief systems that we have. They don't believe in the same God that we believe in, the Son of Jesus Christ. They believe they should die to please their God. Our God died for us and to save us from our sins. Pretty incredible. But today's world, evil is everywhere. And you know what? Someone might harm you for doing good. It can happen in today's world. You might be harmed for actually doing what's good. We had that happen this last weekend in the news in Texas. People have been harmed for doing the right thing, doing their job. He says this, but even if you should suffer for doing good, even if you suffer for doing good, you're going to be blessed. Now, you may not be blessed right now. You may not show up. You might think while you're sitting in the hospital after something happened, what happened? You will be blessed. God will take care of you. It does not go unnoticed by God. Even if we suffer for doing good, we will be blessed. So we're challenged with this, to wrap things up with. Think about this. We're challenged with this. How do we act then when we're treated wrong? How do you act when you're treated wrong? Now, this is where it starts. The rubber's hitting the road, guys, because it's tough for you and it's tough for me. When you're treated wrong, how do you act? I know a lot of you. Okay? I know this hurts you as much as it hits me. Okay? Because if you're treated wrong, we want revenge. We're not ever talking to them again. We're holding the grudge. We got it, and we're holding on to it, and we ain't letting go. We're good at it. Yeah, sad that Christians are good at it. But when we're treated wrong, how do we act? Do we do what Jesus said? Turn the other cheek? Live a life that's right? Do the good things to them when they treat us wrong? If they're hungry, to give them food, water? When we're treated wrong, when someone treats us wrong, do we love them anyways? Do we get revenge? Now, sometimes in our minds, and it goes there very quickly because we live in this fallen world, our minds plan revenge. Do you guys know what I'm talking about? You're like, oh! And then you're like, oh, no, I shouldn't do that. I shouldn't do that. They'll lock me up. Okay, you know, you not good. Yeah, your minds go there too, okay? You think about it. So, do we want revenge? Yes, we want revenge, but it's better for us to suffer for doing what is right. Do we just suffer for what is doing right? When people do wrong to us, and it might be taking money from you, it might be injuring you, the hard one, and I'm going to be straight out honest with you, the hardest one is when they do something evil or mean to an innocent child, whether it's your child or somebody else's child. You can get my dander going pretty fast with that one. Because they're innocent children. And if they're your children, you know, like poking mama bear, don't want to do that. But our kids are going to suffer, especially if they're following Christ. They're going to be picked on for following Christ. It's not the popular thing anymore. It's not the popular thing. And we don't like that. So how do we act even when our loved ones are injured or hurt when they're completely innocent? Do we love them? Do we support them? Do we encourage them? Do we bless them? That's the question that comes up. See, the thing is we need to be like-minded, be sympathetic, love one another, be compassionate, be humble. See, the thing is it's tough for us to grasp that sometimes. Peter calls us to live a life that's different. He says, you're going to be attacked, you're going to be accused, you're going to have wrong done to you. And how are you going to respond? People will know that you are Christ followers by your love. And so I encourage you, I hate a lot of stuff today. I encourage you, take a moment when you're home, around dinner time, lunch, whatever, and think about it. Because how do you normally react when you were wronged? Is it the right way? Are you acting the way you're supposed to? Maybe you need to offer forgiveness to somebody and they don't even know they've done anything wrong to you. That happens quite often. Someone does something wrong to you and they don't even know they did it. Maybe you just need to offer forgiveness to them. And whether they say, hey, I'm fine, whatever, and they're arrogant about it, doesn't matter. The monkey's off your back. And you've offered forgiveness and you've forgiven them and you'll be so much more peace in your life. See, Peter's just trying to help these people in these churches that are just getting started to try to live life in a culture, in a society that is not Christian. And folks, our society and our culture is not Christian anymore. And so we can take good encouragement from these words and apply it to our lives. And so I encourage you, be like-minded, be compassionate, be humble, be those things, love one another, and put it to practice at first with this group, and then put it to practice with those outside. Let them know that you are followers of Jesus. And if they ask you about their church, you should be able to tell them. I encourage you to do that. We're going to stand, we're going to offer an invitation, and it's always open to anyone who does not know Jesus Christ. We invite you to come. We'd love to talk to you about that. But if you just need prayer, if you need to get right back with God, we encourage you to do that. And sometimes it's just that. Last week we had people came forward and says, man, our marriage hasn't been where it's supposed to be. We just need to, because we were talking about marriage last week. And they said, I got to invite Jesus to be first in my life. You know, if you need to get back right with God, I encourage you to do it. There's no time like the present. Let's stand, and as we sing, we invite you to come.